welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, and we're doing it right now on Tuesday morning. Joining me from Austin, Texas, is Kirk Goldsberry. Hello, Kirk.
Hello, Brian. I hope you're enjoying the All-Star break as much as I am.
I hope you are enjoying it. My workload completely stays the same. So. that right there, joining us from New York City, is Anscape's Mark J. Spears, but he's not going to speak just yet, because at this moment we have to congratulate Mr. Spears on being named to the Basketball Hall of Fame with the Kurt Gowdy Award, which was he was given. It was announced over the weekend, in All-Star Weekend in Salt Lake City. So we have on this podcast a genuine Hall of Famer. It's kind of it's uplifting to me, Mark. But it's also depressing, because I feel like the Hall of Fame is what you get in at the end of your career, and you're not that much older than me. Having said that, you are one of the most respected men in the field, and this is a tremendous honor. Absolute congratulations, and I hope you and your family get to embrace this and enjoy it. And the induction is in August in Springfield. Yeah. And hey, man, congratulations. We're so proud of you and so happy for you.
Oh man, thank you, man. It's over the weekend in Salt Lake was just crazy, and just the love that I got, because you know I found out 2 days before, but yeah, I'm like, well, they could change their mind. I need to hear them say it publicly, right? So when they did say it publicly, and I'm going in with Holly Rowe, who, I mean, kudos to her, she's super amazing. That was actually the first time I ever met her. I'm still kind of like overwhelmed by it all. But I'm like, I got like 500 text messages, man. Like,
yeah, people. I text you congratulations. And I was like, oh, I'm only hear back from you from a couple of days. I heard back from a couple hours. So I knew you must've been, on your phone trying to get back to everybody.
Yeah, no. So it was, you know, my wife got to be there too. And, kind of see like the joy from her eyes, like, oh man, I'll never forget that moment. And as I told Tim Bontemps, man, like, shoot, they can put my name in a closet or upside down, but it's in there, right? Like, right. It's in the Hall of Fame. And you know, as a kid, like, I grew up thinking about trying to be a Hall of Fame basketball player, and definitely wasn't that. But you know, to get in this way, like, is man, super humbling and stunning to me. It's just, you know, it's an probably the most incredible honor of my life, for sure.
Yeah, Kirk, you look at the list of winners of this award, it's basically a who's who of the great basketball journalists in history. So that's who we've got on the pod with us right now.
Yeah, it's setting the bar pretty high. And then, like Wendy said, Mark, it's particularly impressive given that you're not quite an old dude just yet. So have some trips to Springfield lined up for years to come and show yeah, that off to so. Your friends. I mean, that's great. I mean, what a mic drop moment for you to be, hey, let's go to the Hall of Fame. And then yeah, here's my little plaque or my exhibit or whatever they're going to give you. I don't care, like you said, if it's in a closet, it's in there, and you deserve it, and you get to show that off to people like me for years to come. So congrats, my dear.
Well, I'm sure you guys will be there soon too, right? So it's funny, David Aldridge, who, I mean, is one of my biggest mentors, he like grabs his phone. He said, look at this. I'm like, what? And he showed me like a picture of his name in the Hall of Fame, like where it was. And I was like, that's pretty dope. He was with, he just seeing his pride and he's certainly somebody that I've really watched. Like, you guys understand, you have people that you watch, and kind of same way players steal stuff from people, we steal stuff from other journalists and how to do our job. So like, to see him excited and show me what it's going to be like, you know, and hear my mom say, well, I'm coming. Like,
yeah.
It's, I'm beyond excited about this. And when I do get the opportunity to speak on August 11th, man, I care more about saying thank you to all the people that were important to me than like pounding my own chest. Like, you know, there's a lot of people that are really, really important to me that I need to highlight. So I'm looking forward to doing that.
Yeah. That's going to be one of the most important things you write, my guy. I've watched a few people go through that. Yeah.
No pressure.
Yeah, right.
Oh, man.
Now, at least I think I got something to read off of. At least, you know, I can practice it and all that. So that helps.
Yeah. Kirk used to work for the Spurs. He was used to being around Hall of Famers. He's not overwhelmed.
That's what I was going to say. I've seen people go through this process, and it's a very important
message. Yeah, but they're not writers, right?
No, that's right. Manu could have done anything.
That's where we're stronger than them, is at least we know how to write.
Right? Yeah, there you go. There you go. But yeah, who's in their class? Isn't it Greg Popovich going to be up there?
Popovich, Gasol,
Dirk,
Parker, and Dirk.
Oh, Parker.
I would expect Gene Katie to make it. I assumed he was in there already. He's a finalist as well. So I expect all of them to get in. I got one of the cool things was at the ceremony, like being up on stage with Wade and Gasol was dope, right? Like and like Wade congratulating me was cool, man. I mean, but I did have a quick moment with Gasol where I said, hey man, being obviously Kobe Bryant, I said, man, he'd be really proud of you. And I think he kind of choked up a little bit. So I could see, because I remember when Kobe got in, obviously the late, great Kobe Bryant got in, that Powell was there and definitely was around, you know, Vanessa Bryant a lot and is very close to the family still. So I'm not speaking for the Bryant family, but I would, they were at the All-Star game, which was great. I would expect them to go with Powell to honor Powell. I would think they will. And so that's kind of a little side story that I think that All-Star weekend is going to, I mean, Hall of Fame weekend is going to be a little emotional because Powell being there brings Kobe back too.
Yeah. Well, it's remarkable. I always find it so remarkable. The Powell's relationship with Kobe's family, because there were times where Kobe was really, really rough on Powell. that's the Kobe experience, right? Is that he beats you up and then at the end he hugs you.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that will be recalled. I mean, the other thing about Powell is that he was a superstar before he came to LA and then he helped uplift that team to two titles. So
can I add something to that too? Basketball related, and Kirk, I definitely like to hear what you think on this. I think what was incredible, Brian, you mentioned it, like Powell was a star already when he was traded to the Lakers in 2008. But you have all these teams that have made all these changes, right, before the trade deadline. The Lakers made a ton. The Clippers have made a ton. Obviously, the Nets have made a major change. And Kirk, like, this is you know, your stats, like, guru, right? But when you make all these changes, like, I'm still pretty stunned that the Lakers were able to go to the finals that quickly. Yeah. With integrating Powell in the middle of the season, they, you know, in 2008, right? He got there and they were able to bring him in. Like, that usually doesn't happen that quickly. It usually takes time for a team to gel and with all these new players, which I think is going to be perhaps an amazing challenge for the Lakers and the Clippers. Is like, you're just incorporating all these guys. Maybe Phoenix, not so much because it's one megastar, but, I was always in awe how Powell was able to like fit in with a big star like Kobe and get the Lakers to the finals.
Yeah. We talk about the pressure that Rob Pelinka has been under the last few months to make a deal. Remember that year Kobe asked for a trade.
Yeah.
Kobe, you know, not asked for a trade behind the scenes and let it slip out through the media, went on the radio, went on TV and said, I've played my last game in a Laker uniform.
Hey Brian, and wasn't that the day that LeBron got his first MVP?
No, LeBron didn't get his first MVP.
Because I feel like he made a trade demand the day LeBron got his first MVP award.
Well, you know what, Spears, you might be right about that. So LeBron won his first MVP in 2009. He won 9, 10, 12, and 13. So no, I don't think so.
Okay.
But I do remember,
like, you know, something major happened for LeBron that day.
It's possible. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But you know, think of the pressure that Mitch Kupchak was under and Jerry Buss was under. And they delivered that deal. But I will say this, having covered some teams that have made massive changes in the middle of the season. Yeah, it can work out, but it's hard. You know, I remember in 2008 when, maybe it was 2007. I can't remember what year it was, but the Cavs I was covering with LeBron made a 10-player trade at like 2:55 p.m. on deadline day. And I remember the next day, the Cavs were playing. It was one of those more surreal moments in my career. The Cavs were actually playing a game. They had like seven players. They were playing a game. And all four players arrived, and they did the press conference for the new players during halftime of the game. And so it was like Ben Wallace, Delonte West, Wally Szczerbiak, and Joe Smith sitting. And of course, it didn't finish in time. So we're in the press conference, and we're hearing from Ben Wallace about how he's going to show LeBron how to win a championship. And out, you can hear in the bowl, you know, Damon Jones, LeBron, like the Cavs are scoring baskets with their seven players while their new players are being introduced. And it was just an indication of the oddity of the moment. And that's the situation the Lakers are in. You know, they're starting the team that Darvin Ham started at the last right before the break. 60% of the starters, three of the five starters, they just acquired within a few days. You're changing out three of your starters in February.
It's crazy, right?
Wild. So we're going to talk a little bit right now about a team that's radically changing its lineup, and that's the Phoenix Suns. So not 100% sure Durant is going to come back for Friday's game against the Thunder at home. He kind of was hedging a little bit and talking to some folks in the organization. They're not sure, although it seems unlikely that he's going to be able, you know, because you want a scrimmage and then you want to see how you react to a scrimmage. They're not practicing until Thursday. Seems like it might be tough for Friday. I'm planning on going out to Phoenix for the game on Friday. So we'll see if I'm seeing Durant or not. But
is
they
it
have
a home stand or just one game?
No, they go on a road trip. They actually have a couple of high profile games coming up here. They play Sunday in Milwaukee, and then they are on the road for the week, and then they finish their road trip in Dallas. Sunday after a week from this Sunday, Sunday afternoon ABC game, Durant, Kyrie, Luka, Chris Paul, Booker. Hopefully everybody's healthy. That'll be an interesting one. Also this Sunday, I believe that the Mavericks play the Lakers on Sunday afternoon. So lots of interesting storylines coming up now that we're in full swing basketball season. The premium Sunday games and Saturday games are coming because these are the games, these matchups they've been saving till after football season. But the Suns, Kirk, I think are going to be in a fascinating situation with the lineup that they're going to deploy. They've already been one of the league's best teams with, you know, when they're all healthy. And now they trade two of their starters, Bridges and Cam Johnson, bring in Durant to pair him with Booker on the wing. The possibilities of what this team can do offensively are incredible.
Yeah, that's exactly what I've been studying since we got the news. There's a couple things that jump off the page. Obviously, the top four players are pretty clear. One question we have to figure out is who's going to be the fifth player. But you're exactly right. This is the fifth ranked team in the West, and it's not often that the fifth ranked team in the West becomes the betting favorite to come out of the West. That's unusual, and it obviously has everything to do with the Durant trade. The 18th ranked offense in the NBA, that's such a misleading stat right now, Brian, because that number is already 120 when Booker has played. He's missed a lot of time. I can't wait to see this offense for one sort of nerdy reason. And Spears, and you guys will appreciate this. These are three elite mid-range talents in the era of endless catch and shoot threes. What we're about to see with Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and Chris Paul is three professors of mid-range scoring lining up and just punishing teams that over the last few years have sort of been trained to give up these mid-range shots and not guard this forsaken area between the paint and the three-point line. Well, Kevin Durant finds efficiency there better than anybody in the history of the game. And this is the one stat that I've hovered around with Kevin all year in the 25 years since they've been tagging shot locations in NBA games. Nobody has put up better mid-range shooting numbers, no volume scorer, than Kevin Durant has this season. The only one close was Kevin Durant last season. So he's better than Dirk. He's better than Jordan. He's better than Kobe. This is going to be fun to watch and impossible to stop. I can't wait for these Suns offensive possessions because they're just going to punish teams in a really unique way, I think, Brian.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Yeah, Spears, so Torrey Craig has been starting most of the year because of injuries to Booker and Cam Johnson.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if he stays in the starting lineup. He's actually having the best shooting season of his career. He doesn't get a lot of attention. He doesn't shoot that many threes. Yeah. He's shooting over 40%. But Josh Okogie, who kind of got promoted to the starting lineup in this interim period while Durant's still coming back from a knee injury, he's had four of the better games of his career, certainly four of the best games of the last couple years. And that's the thing about the Suns. Like, their front office just traded away the farm to get Durant. But they have also done a good job of backfilling this roster.
Yeah.
Lee has been one of the, Damian Lee is a guy that they signed. He's been one of the top 3-point shooters in the league. Okogie, who they got for cheap, has been really good. Torrey Craig, who they've acquired a couple of different times, has been a good spot starter. So anyway, I don't know whether Monty Williams will go with Okogie or stick with Torrey Craig, but with what Kirk said, like, there's a firepower here, Spears, that we're going to witness.
Well, and obviously, you know, with Jay Crowder not being on the roster basically this season, like, the Suns bench has been a really huge concern. So even if one of those two guys you mentioned stays in, like, let's Craig stays in the starting lineup, so I don't think it's a bad thing, because I mean, somebody has to not have to have the ball. right
somebody's got to stand over there and space the floor.
So, but what I like, though, is like say Josh Okogie's still on the bench, you got Damon Lee on the bench, TJ Warren is on the team now. I really like the addition of Terrence Ross.
Yeah, he had 17 points in his first game with them.
Exactly. Darius Bazley is an interesting kid who I've seen, like, some flashes of. I don't know how much he'll get to play for the Suns, but I like him. So to me, like, their bench got a lot better and deeper. And I mean, I don't know how much the Suns are healthy. Those guys are going to really, really play. But to have Warren and Ross on your bench, man, like, those are two really, really good players. So I think obviously it's an upgrade, you know, with Kevin Durant. But, you know, now they're also have rid themselves of the Crowder situation. They have a really good bench, a better bench now. And then if you look at the standings, like, Phoenix, they're only 4.5 out of the second spot. And like, Denver's too far away. I don't think they'll mess with Denver, but if they could get it rolling, I do think I expect them at minimum to at least move up in the top four in the West, if not even better. You know, Memphis didn't go into the break playing that well.
Now, we'll Memphis is one of the big things we got to watch in the second half, man. They lost their mojo a little bit. But they'll get Steven Adams back relatively soon. So that'll help. But
I'm curious to see, like, I mean, Durant's a big addition, but I just feel like with Chris Paul there, that they're going to gel quickly.
Yep.
And he and Book, and I think Ayton's going to get some of the easiest shots of his life. like easy putbacks, easy stuff in the post. Because when you have those three guys on the perimeter, I mean, it's about to get real easy for DeAndre Ayton, who's
might not lead the league
in field goal percentage.
The guy who Durant used to play with, Nick Claxton, is there for a reason because of what Durant would do.
And real quick, Brian, Durant knows how to throw that quick alley-oop to Ayton. You know what I mean? Like the drive and just toss it up to him. They're gonna be a beast, boy.
Yeah. So I'm not an X's and O's specialist. I leave that to other people who are better at it than I am. But what I do know is the way the Suns' offense operates. They run a lot of stuff to free Chris Paul up around the elbows, because we know Chris Paul is one of the game's greatest ever elbow players. Especially as he battled knee injuries, he went from being a guy who drove in to being a guy who controlled the mid-range. And that offensive system, which Booker is very comfortable with, you know, they basically use Ayton as a screener more than almost anybody in the league. And then you know, Chris Paul and Booker go to work. Durant fits into that beautifully. Durant, you know, working through off the elbows is perfect. So not only I think Durant slide in to their offense already, all the players already comfortable with a sort of an offensive style that Durant's comfortable with, although Durant would be comfortable with anything. But, you know, Durant's, some of the plays that the Suns love to run are plays that Durant has run for 15 years. Like they're these things to get him free either at the elbow or to get him free on the wing for a three.
And he's not new to Monty Williams. Monty's known him, coached him before. With the Thunder and maybe with USA Basketball.
Oh, yeah, definitely USA as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that's going to be very good. Also, they're protected a little bit. Like they can have the same potency with Booker on the bench because you have Durant out there, vice versa. And look, we know Chris Paul is fragile to injuries. Okay. That's like their biggest issue. Some of the stuff that Chris Paul does to set things up, Durant can do. Yeah. And some of the plays that they run for Ayton, Durant can run, because people forget Durant is a great screener when he sets a screen, because he can roll because he's 7 foot tall and he's a tremendous touch around the basket. So defensively, here's the other thing. Durant's really good on defense. Durant's a basket protector. So he's going to help him defensively. And Torrey Craig is a good defensive player. I think they're going to, you know, in the West, it's wide open. I think that they've got to love their chances, and we're going to watch them. So by the way, Sunday, I don't know if Giannis is going to be available because he has this thumb injury that I think is going to hold him out for a bit.
Yeah. Sounds doubtful.
It will be a Jay Crowder revenge situation in Milwaukee. So
what is he going to do? Just defend real hard? Like,
yes, the answer is yes. But
foul somebody, like, you know what I mean?
Yes, that's what he's going to do exactly.
All right, no shade, Jay. You're a great player, man.
Speaking of,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, he's going to. I don't think Monty is intimidatable. It takes a lot to get that done. We're talking about the Clippers here in a minute, but the team on the other side of this transaction, the Nets, today, Tuesday morning, announced that they'd signed Jock Vaughn to a contract extension. So he's going to be their coach going forward. Get some interim coach tag titles removed in the Atlantic Division with Joe Mazzulla getting a new deal and now Jock Vaughn getting a new deal. Kirk, they're off their starting lineup that Jock was going with at the end of the break. He had Spencer Dinwiddie in as his point guard. He was starting Mikal Bridges, who had a 40-point game as he's being more featured. Cam Johnson, the Twins, back from Phoenix. They brought him over, kept him in the starting lineup together. Then Dorian Finney-Smith, he was starting basically at the four, part of the Kyrie trade. And then Nick Claxton, who's been really good for them this season. And then they bring off the bench. They have moved Royce O'Neal to the bench. They bring Cam Thomas off the bench, who I know people will wonder, the guy who keeps scoring 40 points, why they got him off the bench. Well, there's some things about his game they need to work on. But he talked about a microwave score. Then they've got Joe Harris and Seth Curry that they're bringing off the bench. Two of the they're not having their greatest seasons, especially Seth, but two sniper bench players. And I haven't even mentioned Ben Simmons because that's a complicated topic, but he is a bench player for them. And that doesn't even bring up Patty Mills and Utah Watanabe, who Utah Watanabe, when he's healthy, has been really good for them. And Patty Mills obviously has a long career. That is an incredibly deep roster. None of those players I named are all-stars now. I think some of them have potential. I think Mikal Bridges might have potential to do that. Cam Thomas, I don't know. But that is a heck of a, and they're also 10 games over 500. So like this is no longer a championship contender, but I also don't think this is a team that we've heard the last from this season.
Yeah. I talked to a few friends there and they told me two things. One, the vibes are immaculate all of a sudden. And two, the expectations are lower, and you hit on a couple things. This is a good roster. This is a playoff team, but they're not expecting to win a championship. I think one of the challenges that Jacques Vaughn is looking at now, we talked about sort of these teams coalescing in a limited amount of time remaining in the regular season. This is one of the harder ones. Spencer Dinwiddie is being asked to sort of run a more traditional offense. This team now, without the offensive efficiency in a can that is Kevin Durant, that is Kyrie Irving, has to go about finding shots in more traditional, conventional ways. They're looking for Dinwiddie to really do that. And to me, I will talk about Ben Simmons, because when I look at those names you just rattled off, Brian, whether he's ready for it or not, Ben Simmons has become more important to this team on both ends of the court. And for years, people like me have wondered if you could build a good basketball team around a playmaker like Simmons. And those of us who believed that you could really looked at these types of players as being the ideal players to put next to Ben Simmons, guys who can run and shoot in the open floor. Nick Claxton is arguably the prototype big who can run the floor right now. But I'm talking more about players like Mikal Bridges, Dorian Finney-Smith, Cam Johnson, shooters like Joe Harris, and Seth Curry. If there was ever a moment for us to see vintage Ben Simmons come through and run in the open floor and find, he was one of the great three-point assisters in his earlier years. Man, this team could be exciting, but a lot of it does, in my opinion, hinge to, does Ben Simmons, is he able to flip that switch? Maybe not this year, but going forward. I know you guys have both studied him for years, but for me, that's really the interesting question in the short term and the middle term is what is Ben Simmons going to be here? Because I love this roster if he's able to turn back the clock a little bit.
And perhaps there's like, it's still New York, right? But perhaps the pressure lessens on him now a little with these changes, and it lessens the expectations of the team, and maybe Ben loosens up. Because it seems like a mental thing to him, to me, watching him play. Like, I'm like, where? It's almost like the Monstars. You feel like somebody stole him, right? Like, I mean, he's much better than this. But the guy I'm excited about is Mikal Bridges, man.
Right.
He dropped 45 in his last game. And it was interesting. I was at the last game that before the trade, and it was the Suns in Brooklyn. And I was at that game, and, Book was coming back. So I was asking Monty, like, who were you most impressed with while Book was out? And now thinking about it, I'm like, well, was he trying to help the Nets out trade? I mean, the Suns trade-wise. But he just gushed about Bridges and how Bridges had scored well for him, like helped the Suns win a lot of games, showed leadership. And, I actually talked to Bridges before the game last week in New York. And just about the shocking trade and how he's adjusting and now having an opportunity to prove that he is a star player in this league. He is a all-star player in this game. And he's not, his game isn't flashy. He does it on both ends. But I think playing in Brooklyn, like now he has an opportunity to be the leader of this team. He dropped 45, so he showed you that he could score. And perhaps now could be one of the you know, top stars are the face of the Nets.
You know, top it's a what if. So obviously the Suns did not want to include Bridges in that trade. Ultimately, they were okay with the draft picks. They were okay with Cam Johnson, the swap. Obviously, I think they would have put Jay Crowder. I mean, they ultimately did put Jay Crowder in. As it turned out, that was the last haggling piece. Matt Ishbia, the new owner, was very, very focused on making this trade and basically, you know, directed the team to do it. James Jones ultimately was on board with it, but I think James Jones would have preferred to go all the way down to 3 o'clock on Mikal Bridges. It didn't go down to 3 o'clock. They agreed to it and made the deal, you know, 12 hours, whatever it was, 15 hours before the deadline.
Some interesting insight you just dropped there, Brian.
Yeah,
you can't just slide that in there, man. Like,
well,
like,
I wrote.
But all go ahead. I'm gonna let you just slide that in there. Like, we don't have to push you on that.
Well, I just wonder if at the end, basically what happened was the Nets said no negotiation and they got the deal they wanted. They essentially set the terms and didn't negotiate. And the Phoenix ultimately agreed and gave them, you know, the whole bag, and they may not regret it. Yeah. But you do wonder, and by the way, maybe if Sean Marks were here, he'd say, well, guess what? No negotiation on Tuesday meant no negotiation on Thursday. We'd have just kept Durant. Yeah. And, you know, Bridges was everything. And that may be 100% true.
And that, but hey, got a new owner, man, that puts some pressure on James if that's what the new owner wants.
That is what the new owner wanted. And, you know, the new owner, you know, like, you know, James Jones was moving on to a John Collins trade. Whether or not that was a leveraging point to leverage Brooklyn into moving, I don't know. But they had a John Collins, like the talks broke down and they had a John Collins trade ready to go. And Matt Ishbia was like, you know what? I don't want John Collins. With all due respect, I want Kevin Durant, which is of course what anybody would want. And he just literally the day before transferred $2.7 billion. You know, if you ever bought a house, like you get all your money together and you know, you have your bank balance and then you write that cashier's check for your down payment. If you ever had this experience, and it's like, holy Moses, I've just written this gigantic check and now I have nothing. You know, Matt Ishbia transferred $2.27 billion to Robert Sarver and his partners to buy out that team.
So nice.
He, you know, yeah, it must be nice to collect 2.27 and then watch it go by. Okay. So when you do something like that, you can decide who gets traded. Like that's part of the deal. And so like, I just wonder, was there some way the Suns could have played that where they could have kept Bridges?
Well,
probably
Brian,
not.
Brian,
probably not.
This is the thing in the NBA that people got to realize. Like it's not too often that somebody's getting fleeced, right? You got to give up something to get something.
Of course. And like, that's what the Nets would say.
Yeah. And in Sacramento, I remember last year, they're like, We left, you know, lost Tyrese. Yeah, Sabonis is good too. Like, yeah. I thought it was a good trade for both teams. And under the circumstances, I thought it was pretty good for the Suns under the circumstances, although no one's Durant. But I wonder what if the Suns had offered Mikal in the offseason? Like, could that deal have been done in August or when he had made the previous trade request?
Well, I think the deal probably doesn't get done with Brout Bridges, but I just
no. But what if they did? Like,
oh, last summer?
Yeah, like I don't look. I'm a big Kevin Durant fan, man. You could have Bridges. You could have that gorilla mascot. Like, you know, can I send some cactus? Like, what do you want, man?
Well,
can I get
ultimately,
some passes for the W pool in Scottsdale? Like, what do you
ultimately
need, man?
Right. Ultimately, that's what they decided. They decided that as much as they love Mikal Bridges, they love Kevin Durant more. So I'm just saying though, like they were trying to figure out a way to do that deal without Bridges in it. Obviously they couldn't do it. But
like, come on now. Like it's Kevin Durant. Like what do they expect?
Well, they're trying to win the title. That's what they're trying
desperate?
To do. No, they're trying to win
be
the title
for him. This ain't like Kyrie's situation.
Well, and that's the position that the Nets were taking. And that's why they didn't get a deal last summer.
Yeah.
And it took, you know, the Suns putting in basically everything they had to get him now. So, all right, before we go, I want to take a look at what the Clippers have decided to do with Russell Westbrook. Spears, what was your initial reaction when this went down where the Clippers went ahead? Because this was not a simple decision. There was a whole bunch of players that got bought out and were already playing for other teams while Westbrook was still hanging out there. There was all kinds of meetings within the Clippers. Woj reported that Westbrook had discussions with Lawrence Frank, with Ty Lue. You know, this, you know, I'm sure Steve Ballmer had a lot of talks with his front office and Ty Lue. Like, this was not a simple decision. What do you think about the Clippers, you know, going in and making, pulling the trigger on Westbrook?
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing that Paul George must have like really, really fought for him and wanted him. And, you know, they had a, obviously by this, they must have had a pretty good relationship in Oklahoma City, you know, for him to want to do this. And it allows Russell to stay home. But like the Clippers, I think, have a good problem because, I mean, you got, I don't know, respectfully to Russ, Eric Gordon's a sniper boy. I'd probably play Eric Gordon over him. I could be wrong.
Eric Gordon had seven in the last game before the Clippers, before the break. The Clippers had one of their better wins of the season. They went into Phoenix and won I think a game was in Phoenix. They beat Phoenix, had been hot. Phoenix had won 5 out of 6 because Chris Paul and Booker were healthy again. Yeah. Ayton has been playing great. They go in there and win. And Eric Gordon was really good in that game.
Yeah.
Had 7 assists and like 16 points off the bench operating the offense.
But look at Terrence, their guards. Mann. Like, this is their guards, right? The reserve guards. You just mentioned Terrence Mann. You got Eric Gordon, Bones Highland, a talented young player. I know Amir Coffey and Boston Jr., Brandon Boston, like they were already frustrated about their lack of time probably. And now they might as well just go in you know, enjoy the sights right now, you know, and Norman Powell is kind of like a swing man to me. Like they better had some great, I'm sure they must have some amazing conversation with Russell Westbrook, because I don't know what he could expect in terms of playing time, like rotation. I mean, like, where does he fit in? Like, Paul George is going to play a lot, right? Like,
Paul George operates.
Is he going to play point guard? Like, how are they going to use him? Is he going to start at point? Like, I don't know. I like Eric Gordon a lot, man. And to me, if you got Eric Gordon on the court with Paul George and with Kawhi, Russ, you could watch that too. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to keep Eric Gordon on the court with them two guys as much as possible.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-sinking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. I was pretty surprised. When I saw it, I was like, wow. Because I think Kawhi had to have been for it too.
Right.
But Paul George was the catalyst. Kirk, I was like, wow, I can't believe they did it.
Do you start him? What's his role? What do you guys think his role is?
Listen, man, you cannot start him. Come on, man. You cannot start him. Absolutely not. No, it is absolutely
When do you bring him off the bench? Never. Like, how do you use him? Never. What's his role?
Exactly. I don't know.
That's the big question, guys. This is a question of role clarity. If you're telling me Westbrook's going to play 30 minutes a night for this team, I hate this move. I hate it. I've watched a decade of it. This guy is inefficiency in a can. He turns the ball over more than almost any other player in the league. He takes shots that other players, teammates should take. It's it is going to come down to how he's being used. And before, here's where I was with this team. I was talking to Zach about it last week after the flurry of deadline moves that this team made, that Spears, you did a great job sort of outlining. And then I loved it. I loved all the pieces. Ty Lue, one of my favorite playoff coaches. I thought those trade deadline moves gave Ty Lue a lot to play with. And he's a great tinkerer, a great strategist. I love that pre-Westbrook flurry of moves for this team's playoff. If you look at the numbers with Kawhi and Paul, man, this team is starting to just hum. And that I love the versatility they have. And then they just throw this in there.
Gluttonous, right?
If Westbrook accepts a diminished role, which is the biggest if west of the Mississippi River, folks. If he accepts a diminished role, this could work. But if you're telling me he's starting or he's a high volume player, he's closing games, I don't like this move at all for Ty Lue and the Clippers. So I think the ultimate question, and you guys already alluded to it, is a role clarity question. What are we expecting here? 5 minutes a game, 20 minutes a game, 30 minutes a game? The answer to that sort of will tell me how to feel about this risk.
Yeah.
The Clippers started Terrence Mann, I guess, it's at point guard. They don't really have a point guard, right?
Well, that's the thing.
They traded him out.
Yeah. I mean, they, you know, John Wall was injured already and they traded him. They traded out Reggie Jackson. Terrence Mann does kind of start as their point guard. And by the way, in that game in Phoenix, he had one of his best games of the season. I wonder where his head is at seeing this move. And so they kind of have a, they have a number of different guys that initiate the offense. They, you know, Paul George does it. Kawhi Leonard can do it. Terrence Mann does it. When Marcus Morris is a guy who can distribute a little bit. I'm not saying he's bringing the ball up, but yeah, they can run offense through him. That's the way their team is designed. When they go to the bench, Eric Gordon has been coming off the bench. Like I said, he led them in assists last game. I'm not saying that'll be the case every time. Eric Gordon's been handling the ball his whole career. He's been a guy who can do it part-time. They have Bones Highland, who is not a pure point guard, but certainly can play that role. They have a lot of guys sort of sharing.
Who do you like better, Bones or Russ?
Come on, man.
Like, I'm just saying, like, where, what is he going to play? What's,
I mean,
his role? Like,
he's a, the thing about Russ is he's like, when I went to the Lakers.
Come on, man. Are you like, what do you mean, come on, man?
So when I went to the game where LeBron broke the record, Russ had 19 points in that game, and he had 4 or 5 pretty nice plays where he got down the court, you know, because he still plays with great intensity, still plays with high speed. He had a couple of, you know, he might have had a steal or two. Like, he, like, I could put together a highlight package from that game and show
he
it to you.
He was doing well, like, for the Lakers.
And you'd be like, man, like, that's like, you know, how could they, how could the league not be crawling all over themselves to get this guy? And I see fans who see that, they go, I mean, and like, I also think like other players.
But Russ, Brian, don't forget the Darvin Ham situation in the last game.
That's right.
But that's like, what I'm talking about. Like, but if you watch
so
the
if he's
entire
not played
game,
a lot, is he going to get mad at T. Lou? Like,
this is my point. If you watch the entire game, he absolutely killed the Lakers that night. Killed them with so many things that he did in that game. And he refused to leave the court when he was getting subbed out for a guy who was about to break the one of the most historic records in all of sports, gave his coach the side eye at being taken out of the game in that moment. And then when they went in the locker room and the coach got on him about it, they went chest to chest. Okay. That's also Russell Westbrook. Okay. And so, and that's just Russ being Russ. I'm not even, I'm just saying, like, he's just, he is being who he is. And so that's my thing. Like, I'm not sure that that's, you know, that's, teams are afraid of that. Teams are afraid of a role player doing that stuff. And that was the other thing. Like, Bill Plaschke from the LA Times, who's been their columnist forever, he wrote a column yesterday just skewering the Clippers for this move. And he said, he goes, when Russ was on the Lakers, when the team played poorly, but Russ played well, he was happy. When the team played well, but Russ played poorly, he was upset that he wasn't more involved. He said that was a commonplace thing. And that led to some frustration in the locker room. And he thinks the Clippers are crazy for bringing that in. And I'm just going to say that Russ, that Russ is very popular to some people in the league. The thing is, If it does work somehow, though, and I will say this, they didn't trade away five players or whatever it was, four players and a draft pick for him. They didn't pay him $47 million.
Yeah.
Their investment level is a lot lower.
Right.
You know, in theory, I mean,
they could
just
cut him if it goes bad.
Cut him.
And I do think Chicago would have been better for Russ, though.
I think he fits better in that situation because the expectations are way different. And it's not like he's joining a team that has got a lot going for it, especially at guard.
And a coach who's coached him.
Right. But the other thing is, if it does work a little bit, it does allow the Clippers to stick their finger in the Lakers' eye and allows Russ to stick his finger in the Lakers' eye, which, you know, I don't think that should be priority one, but there is a little side ancillary benefit.
I just don't think they needed him. I was like gushing over their team before the All-Star break, all the moves that they made and how they looked. So I was like, it's just kind of like it's kind of gluttonous. It's a little risky, but like you said, if it doesn't work, they could easily say goodbye.
Kirk, what did you think about the Cavs letting Kevin Love walk to the Miami Heat, who they could play in the first round of the playoffs?
I don't like it. The playoffs are such a brutal endeavor. You need depth. And I know Kevin had fallen out of the rotation, but man, like in a tight spot in a game six, if somebody turns an ankle, dude, he's a huge luxury. And he's a veteran who's been to the top levels of the NBA playoffs. And that team doesn't have a lot of that. It was a head scratcher to me, Brian. I did not like it. I like it for Miami for the same reasons, but you know, I know they were trying to do something for a guy who'd fallen out of the rotation. I know the organization was trying to help him out, but this is the time where I would have been selfish if I'm in that front office and being like, guys, what happens if Jared Allen or Evan Mobley turns his ankle in the second round of the playoffs? And now you're telling me I go from a potential Hall of Fame replacement who I know is at the end or not in his prime anymore, but still isn't going to be afraid to make big shots, get rebounds, fire those outlet passes we can all picture in our head. It's a great question. And I love Cleveland. I've been singing their praises for a year now, but this one to me, I was just scratching my head, Brian.
Spears, I could kind of understand why they would let him go if that's what he really wanted.
Yeah.
I cannot believe they let him go sign with a team they could play in the playoffs. Because we know, we've seen that their teams can do buyouts where they say, all right, but pick your team. We want to know who it is, and it's got to not be in the East. I am very surprised they allowed him to go to the Heat.
You know, I wonder if because I do find it interesting. Didn't they say they were going to retire his jersey too?
Yeah, they acted like they were the ones who were imposing something on him. They gave this, you know, Kobe Altman just sang, and you know, Kobe and Kevin have been at odds on and off for years, but they sang his praises, you know, just called him the greatest guy in the world, said they're going to retire his jersey. Oh, and by the way, they did him another favor. They let him make $1.5 million. Here's why. He took $1.5 million less to get out of the contract. He basically gave up $1.5 million, which was more than the minimum that he could have given up, and gives the Cavs a little bit of breathing area under luxury tax if they sign another player. But then he went and signed for $3.1 million with the Heat. So the Heat, you know, I guess feeling the need to compete with other teams for Love, gave him their biannual exception, which was prorated $3.1 million. So Kevin Love in the transaction picked up $1.6 million, which is good for him. I mean, you know, God bless. I'm just saying, like, not only did the Cavs give him what he wanted, they made – the Cavs could have said, give us that extra $1.6 million. Not that it really makes a difference in the world for the Cavs to have another $1.6 million, but, like, not only did they do it, they structured the deal in a way that allowed Love to pick up an extra $1.5 million. Like, you know, he better never say a cross word about the Cavs ever after the way that they've handled him on this one.
But yeah, I mean, to Kirk's point, if they end up playing him in the playoffs, man.
Yeah,
I mean, can't you just see game four? You know, the Cavs are up 2-1. The game's in Miami, and And here comes Kevin Love, and he hits like two threes in like the start of the fourth quarter, changes the game.
Oh, yeah.
Jimmy Butler finishes it, and now all of a sudden the Cavs have lost. I mean,
gets a key rebound. Right?
That's not even like a far-fetched scenario.
No. Uh-uh. So I'm you know what kind of lost in this is when I saw that he was going to be a free agent, I'm like, wow, what a perfect guy for Golden State to add in terms of his size and his rebounding and his shooting ability. And Golden State has come up with nothing. Like, I guess even Patrick Beverley said that he turned down the Warriors. I mean, who knows by the time this podcast runs, if the Warriors do something different. I don't know what's really out there, if there's much out there yet, but they got an open roster spot and haven't been able to find anybody find anybody to take it.
Yeah, well, that is interesting. Yeah,
and I wonder if they looked at Russ too. I'm not sure, but
I would say no way.
Well, Bob probably knows him from the Wasserman days, right? So who knows?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Most of the time, historically, most of the time, buyout guys do not end up making much of an impact.
Yeah.
Except when they do, because it does happen occasionally. Yeah. And there have been
Sam
a couple
Cassell,
of moments.
PJ Brown in Boston were pretty good.
PJ Brown like helped win them a couple of playoff games. So, yeah. But that's what everybody goes to. That's now 15 years ago. And whenever we talk about a buyout guy, we say, oh yeah, PJ Brown. And we were saving it when it was 7 years earlier. We were saving it when it was 10 years earlier. It just doesn't happen that often. There are times. I think Nick Batum, when he went to the Clippers, he was a factor, but okay. Thank you, Mr. Hall of Famer, Kurt Gowdy Award winner, Mr. Mark J. Spears, for your time. Thank you, Kurt Goldsberry. Thank you, Jackson and Bruce, our producers. Thank you, Wilson Hoop Collective. We'll talk to you with the Tims on Friday.